This program is intended for a print-impaired audience and is brought to you by Mind's Eye.
Good evening and welcome to Women's Health. Tonight we're reading from this week's People magazine and Scoop, all the Hollywood news you need to know. Why Jennifer Aniston's romance with Jim Curtis is the most mature relationship she's had. As they approach their one-year anniversary, Jennifer Aniston and her boyfriend, Jim Curtis, have settled into a comfortable place. They went Instagram official with their romance in November, and during a January 26 Today Show appearance to promote his latest project, The Book of Possibility, which will be published in September, Curtis, 50, opened up for the first time about the start of their relationship. We found out that we had mutual friends, and we started to just chat, the hypnotherapist said of meeting Aniston, who's 56. A source close to Aniston, who was previously married to Brad Pitt and Justin Theroux, describes her love connection with Curtis as the most mature relationship she's ever been in. The insider adds, Jim's very laid back but also focus-driven. He does things in a calm way and he brings good energy, and this is something Jen loves. The pair first sparked dating rumors last July after they were photographed enjoying a yacht vacation in Europe, and they've since spent the holidays together and stepped out publicly several times, including to a book event for Curtis on January 3rd in Summerlin, California. The Aniston source says stability has strengthened their bond. In early January, the same source said, Aniston was looking forward to the new year, especially with Jim by her side. As they continue to grow closer, might they be ready to take the relationship to the next level? She's happy where things are, the source says. She isn't really making big plans for the future, and she's not chasing anything. She's just enjoying every minute. Meghan Trainor opens up about welcoming baby number 3 via a surrogate. Meghan Trainor now has a party of 5. The singer and her husband, Spy Kids actor Daryl Sabara, 33, welcomed their third child, a daughter named Mickey Moon Trainor, via surrogate on January 18th in L.A. It feels surreal. I've dreamed about this for so long, and now I'll look at her and still can't believe she's real, Trainor, 32, tells People of having a girl after being a boy mom to sons Riley and Barry. She's healthy, happy, and has all of us wrapped around her fingers. Trainor has been candid about struggling with her mental health following the C-section birth of her first 2 kids. Using a surrogate wasn't our first choice, but we had endless conversations with our doctors on this journey, and this was the safest way for us to be able to continue growing our family. Surrogacy is just another beautiful way to build a family. It's not something to whisper about or to judge. Kate Hudson and mom Goldie Hawn want to do a movie together. Goldie, how have you and your partner Kurt Russell and the family felt about all the awards love for Kate in Song Sung Blue? Well, we all cried in unison. It was quite a family celebration. We're so deeply proud. Not a word I use very often, but I'm in awe of Kate. We all are. What career lessons have been passed from mother to daughter? Well, we learn by example, Han said. We don't learn by oration, rhetoric, none of that. Kate comes from 2 people who make movies and has seen how we behaved. Would you 2 ever do a project together? Han, oh yes, I don't know what though. I just hope we do. Oscar noms bring favorites, snubs, and A-list showdowns. The 2026 Oscar nominations were announced on January 22nd with a new series of surprises and snubs. Winners will be unveiled on March 15th on ABC. The favorites, Sinners, earned the most nods ever, 16, including Best Actor for Michael B. Jordan, 38, Best Picture, and a surprise Best Supporting Actor nom for Delroy Lindo, who's 73. Snubs, Ariana Grande's Wicked for Good was shut out of this year's race entirely after the movie's first part received 10 total nods and 2 wins last year. A-list showdown. After co-starring in 2021's Don't Look Up, Marty Supreme's Timothée Chalamet, 30, and One Battle After Another's Leonardo DiCaprio will go head-to-head for Best Actor. Chalamet has already won Critics' Choice and Golden Globe Awards. How Natalie Portman got an A-list cast to join her new animated movie. Natalie Portman's latest project, the French sci-fi film Arco, just scored an Oscar nod for Best Animated Feature after debuting last May. The anime-inspired project, directed by illustrator Hugo Bienvenue, co-produced by Portman, 44, and featuring her in a voice role along with Will Ferrell, Andy Samberg, America Ferrera, and Mark Ruffalo in the film's English version. follows its titular 10-year-old protagonist as he travels through time and faces a failing government. Dakota Johnson and Role Model heat up in L.A. Dakota Johnson and Role Model are getting hotter in L.A. The actress, 36, and singer, 28, were photographed hand-in-hand on January 23rd in L.A. following a romantic dinner for two in East Hollywood. While the pair haven't confirmed a relationship, they've been spotted several times since a December outing, sparking romance rumors. Johnson previously ended her on-again, off-again relationship with Coldplay lead singer Chris Martin last June. She's in a great place, a source says, in November. Inside the fallout of Blake Lively and Taylor Swift. Texts between Blake Lively and Taylor Swift have shed light on the cooling of their friendship. In legal documents unsealed on January 20th, ahead of a hearing in Lively's legal battle with her Ends With Us co-star and director Justin Baldoni, messages between the actress, 38, and the singer, 36, show the two discussing a disconnect. Is everything okay? I felt like a bad friend lately because I was such a sad sack who only talked about my own shit for months, Lively wrote to Swift on December 4th, 2024. Referring to the much-publicized drama surrounding the 2024 Colleen Hoover film adaptation. Swift responded by telling Lively she was not wrong, adding that it's also not a big deal. The 14-time Grammy winner, who was wrapping up her Eras tour at the time, added, "I think I'm just exhausted in every avenue of my life, and in recent months had been feeling a little bit shift in the way you talk to me." Swift also told her friend, "Just come back, please." The friendship became more complicated after Lively filed a lawsuit against Baldoni in December 2024, alleging sexual harassment and a retaliatory smear campaign. He denies any wrongdoing. The following May, Baldoni's attorneys attempted to subpoena Swift, whose song, My Tears Ricochet, was used in the film. A source previously told People that Swift was hurt that she had been dragged into the legal battle, while another source said the friendship had halted. With the unsealed text dragging Swift back into the headlines, a source says the singer is just trying to stay away from all the drama. Picks, the buzz on what to watch, read, and listen to this week. Top pick, Memory of a Killer. Patrick Dempsey plays a struggling dad living a double life as a slick hitman. It's a series. After decades as a Prince Charming, Patrick Dempsey is officially in his bad guy era. In his latest network outing, he's Angela Doyle, a professional killer working for his longtime pal Dutch, played by Michael Imperioli, in New York City. He's also Angelo Flannery, a copy salesman, grieving his murdered wife and preparing for his daughter, Maria, to become a mom. That double life seems difficult enough to manage before Angelo starts dropping hints at memory issues. His brother is in full-time care for some form of dementia, and given that the show is based on a Belgian novel called The Alzheimer Case, it's easy to guess where the series might go. Hopefully it finds the confidence to take it there. The show has a lot going for it, a promising premise, an adept leading man, though early episodes are fraught with disjointed moments. Perhaps they're an artistic choice to show the unsettling nature of the disease early symptoms? Only time will tell. Free Bert. Bert Kreischer's new scripted comedy series spotlights Gen X meets Gen Alpha through the lens of a funny man dad struggling to pinpoint what constitutes humor and relevancy to his kids in 2026. His shirt may still be off, but so are all bets as the comedian navigates a fictionalized version of his life in this gut-busting, unadulterated laugh fest. It's now on Netflix. The Moment. It's a movie. This cheeky mockumentary stars Charlie XCX as a spiraling version of herself, surrounded by execs and celebs, feeding off the success of Brat. Director Aidan Zimrici channels the 2024 album with a frenetic punk rock energy. It's no Spinal Tap, but it illuminates a modern pop star's conundrums and Charlie's acting chops. Wonder Man. Marvel takes an unexpectedly quiet swing. It's a series, now on Disney+. This new entry to the MCU sees struggling actor Simon Williams befriend Trevor Slattery, played by Ben Kingsley, the disgraced actor who played the Mandarin in Iron Man 3. They connect over their love of the craft and wind up auditioning for a superhero movie, but both have secrets. Simon has superpowers, which is a big no-no for actors, and Trevor is spying on him. A meta super tale like The Boys, but without all the violence and gore. Send help. movie, Rachel McAdams tears into one of her juiciest roles yet as an overlooked office worker who ends up stranded on an island with her arrogant boss. Evil Dead director Sam Raimi matches McAdams' ferocious energy with a violent, funny, and unpredictably good time. The best new books, a dishy 90s set novel, a haunting historical saga, and a short, sweet read about love and memory. Book of the week, If I Ruled the World by Amy Du Bois Barnett. Fiction. Former Teen People editor-in-chief Du Bois Barnett taps into her years as an industry insider to capture the glamorous toxicity and debauchery of the 1990s magazine industry. In this story about a black editor who quits a gig at a glossy to take over a struggling hip-hop magazine, main character Nikki is Carrie Bradshaw meets Kimora Lee Simmons as she sets out to prove she's got what it takes. It's a nostalgic debut about ambition, power, and self-discovery. The Seven Daughters of Dupree by Nikisha Elise Williams. This multi-generational epic is rich with bold characters and overlapping timeliness as it follows seven black women connected through trauma, love, and wisdom. As the ladies reveal decades of family secrets, readers will be left both haunted and inspired. And the third one, Departure, by Julian Barnes. Autofiction. Do novelists owe anything to their friends, to their readers, to the truth? In a slim, uncategorizable volume that will make readers question how much of it is true, acclaimed Barnes ponders those questions while musing on love, memory, and his own mortality. As always, he's first-rate company. Finding Sunshine After Rain, Susan Lucci. Over the course of more than 40 iconic years, All My Children character Erica Kane perfected the act of perseverance. She lived through at least 11 weddings to 8 men, survived a doppelganger who kidnapped her and stole her life, and even scared off a threatening grizzly bear by bellowing, "I am Erica Kane and you are a filthy beast." But one thing the Queen of Pine Valley, Pennsylvania never had to endure was the death of a legal spouse, unlike the actress who portrayed her, Susan Lucci, whose husband of 52 years, Helmut Huber, died in 2022 at age 84, 1 month after suffering a stroke. "The minute I fell in love, like I did with my husband, I knew how vulnerable I was," says Lucci, 79, who played Erica from AMC's very first episode in 1970 until its cancellation in 2011. She and the Austrian-born TV producer wed when she was 22 after dating for just 8 months. "When he died, I was completely lost," she said, "and it's so isolating. You feel so alone, even though I had the most wonderful friends, and I'm so grateful for the people who stood by me." Lucci reflects on how she lived through that grief in her new book called Lelucci, which is out now by Blackstone Publishing. It's the follow-up to 2011's All My Life, a memoir. "Surrendering to vulnerability once again and sharing it with the world was a process that began in the middle of the night," she recalls. "I keep a pen and paper next to my bed in case I get an idea or in case I have to write something down so I don't keep rolling it around. And in this case, I started waking up and then things just started pouring out of me. Initially, it was mostly a coping mechanism, but she eventually realized her late-night musings were a first draft of something larger." She's candid in Lelucci about just how shattered she was after Huber's death. "I felt like half a person. I could hardly remember that I was an actress. It didn't mean anything to me. I thought, do I do that, really? I thought at the time I probably will never go in front of a camera or on stage again." Losing Huber capped a 2-year period of devastating personal blows. In 2020, she lost her older brother Jimmy to lung cancer, and her mother Jeanette died in 2021 at age 104. "Time," she writes, "has been a gentle healer, and her innate strength, the same that made Erica the ultimate soap survivor, has been her superpower. Tiptoeing back into performing helped, as did a certain Sex and the City sidekick who encouraged her to channel the sense of humor she had brought to her post AMC TV roles on Hot in Cleveland and Devious Maids. A couple of months after Huber's death, I had something I had agreed to do, where celebrities read from other celebrities' autobiographies. I knew Mariel Cantone, who played Charlotte's pal Anthony, was going to be there, and he makes me laugh, and he's very sweet. And I thought, I'm lucky I have my career. Maybe that's going to be what will save me. In the book, Lucci discovers her soap opera tenure and shares joyful memories from more than five decades of loving Huber, with whom she shared two children, daughter Liza 50, a former actress who played Gwen Hotchkiss on Passions, and son Andreas, 45. She writes adoringly about her late husband, a classically trained chef with a great sense of humor who called her Susie and loved to drive fast, golf, ski, and cook her European comfort food. "I've had the love of a lifetime," she said. Huber was by her side when she landed the role that made her a star, and at every daytime Emmy ceremony where the 21-time nominee was up for Best Actress and usually lost. She famously won in 1999 on her 19th nomination. The pair were married in September 69, 4 months after Lucy debuted as Erica Kane. "Helmut and I hardly had a fight in the beginning," she said. "A day might be bad or a misunderstanding would occasionally interrupt the calm. The Italian in me would come out sometimes, and Helmut's first language was not English. I remember thinking, wow, I would have to hate to argue in German, but he was smart and he was also very chill." Growing up on Long Island, Lucci was attracted to acting early on, but soaps were never on her radar, despite watching them as a kid. "I suppose to go on stage, not television at all, let alone daytime TV, but there was so much in the 8-page audition that I thought, wow, this character is like a modern Scarlett O'Hara. I want to play her." Over the decades, both Lucci and Erica gathered legions of fans. While navigating the many trials and tribulations of Erica Kane, Lucci settled into domestic bliss with Huber on Long Island. But in 1980, she was thrust into her own harrowing real-life drama when Andreas nearly died of a powerful strain of the flu 36 hours after he was born. "It was hugely impactful on me. I was so grateful to God, the doctors, the nurses. I have written one fan letter in my life, and it was to the nurses in NICU about how they took care of not just my son, but all the other babies too." More recently, Lucci has had to deal with her own health challenges. In 2018 and 2022, after she experienced intense chest pain, her doctors put stents in her heart to address blocked arteries. "I didn't have a heart attack, but it was a wake-up call, and I became very aware that I would need to stay vigilant about my heart health." She is now an ambassador for the American Heart Association. And later this year, she will return to the screen in Outcome, an Apple TV comedy co-starring Keanu Reeves and Cameron Diaz, and directed and co-written by Jonah Hill. Lucci says Hill wrote the part of a Real Housewives-type diva specifically for her. "I spoke to Jonah about it before I accepted the role, and when we hung up, I was in my bedroom by myself, and I burst out crying. It was just so right for me to do and important to get out of my comfort zone." These days, Lucci, who will turn 80 in December, wakes up every morning on a mission. "I'm looking for my joy again." The next story, nurse Alex Preddy killed by federal agents, tragedy after tragedy. Another U.S. citizen is shot amid unrest over President Trump's immigration crackdown, leaving many to wonder, where do we go from here? Video footage of the final seconds of Alex Preddy's life on a snowy Minneapolis street is equally gut-wrenching and chaotic. One moment, the 37-year-old ICU nurse for the city's VA healthcare system is seen using his phone to film federal immigration authorities. The next, Preddy is taken down by several officers after trying to assist another person who was shoved by law enforcement. Then, while he is pinned and struggling against the ring of officers around him, an agent appears to pull a 9mm pistol from the back of Preddy's pants. Immediately after, at least 10 shots are fired at Preddy, who was soon declared dead by medics. "He was trying to help a woman get up and they took him to the ground," said a witness just 5 feet away. "They shot him so many times and I don't know why." 2 weeks after immigration authorities fatally shot 37-year-old mom Renee Good on a nearby street, Preddy's killing on January 24th is the latest tragedy in a city already rocked by large-scale protests over President Donald Trump's immigration crackdown, a signature campaign promise that has spurred intense unrest for its use of force. Despite footage to the contrary, Secretary of Homeland Security Kristi Noem has insisted that Preddy was brandishing his handgun, adding that his intent was to inflict maximum damage and kill law enforcement. He had a permit to carry a concealed weapon and did not have a criminal record. The shooting, says federal officials, was defensive, and they identified the agent who killed Preddy as an 8-year Border Patrol veteran. Minnesota Governor Tim Walz, however, dismissed the portrayal of Preddy as a violent agitator. It's a campaign of organized brutality against the people of our state, and today that campaign claimed yet another life. Those who knew Preddy, who grew up in Green Bay, Wisconsin, and was described as kind-hearted and passionate about both his work, serving veterans, and social issues, weren't surprised to learn he had joined protests in his adopted city of Minneapolis. "He believed that people have certain rights," said a high school friend. "You shouldn't be killed for that." In a statement, his family decried the sickening lies told about our son by the administration and remembered Preddy as someone who wanted to make a difference. What comes next in Minneapolis is upwards of 3,000 federal agents continue pursuing immigrants without legal status is uncertain. Even the probe into Preddy's death, which has seen the Trump administration block local law enforcement's access to the scene, has become consumed by controversy. What does seem clear is that the situation on the streets feels untenable. "It's very sad and I hate it," says Johnny Fouts, a 70-year-old Air Force veteran who was recently cared for by Preddy after undergoing major heart surgery. "I'm not a Democrat, I'm not a Republican, but what the hell's going on in this city of ours?" And the next story, the Beckhams breaking. David and Victoria Beckham's rift with their son Brooklyn and his wife Nicole Peltz Beckman has turned into a public war. What went wrong and why a reconciliation is unlikely. In just 2 months, Brooklyn and Nicola Peltz Beckham will be marking their fourth wedding anniversary. But instead of reflecting on happy memories, the couple are still nursing wounds from a lavish and dramatic wedding day that fractured a delicate relationship between the young couple and Brooklyn's superstar parents, David and Victoria Beckham. What began as family drama over perceived slights regarding a wedding dress, Brooklyn claims his mom pulled out of designing his wife's gown in the 11th hour, and a special dance between the newlyweds, hijacked by Victoria, says Brooklyn, has now turned into a full-blown public battle that has the world wondering, how on earth did things get this bad, and who is actually to blame? While there's little Brooklyn and his parents currently see eye to eye on, sources from both sides all agree there are no winners. Rumors of friction between the couples first began circulating last May. Still, neither the Beckhams nor Brooklyn or Nicola publicly addressed the feud until January 19th, when Brooklyn, 26, unleashed a string of scathing Instagram posts deriding his parents and blaming them for everything from his lifelong anxiety issues to trying to ruin his marriage. A Brooklyn source says the reason he did so is that he and Nicola, 31, believe that David, 50, and Victoria, 51, are personally behind all the bad press he and his wife have received over the past several years. "They're so beaten down," says a Brooklyn source. In his shocking social media post, Brooklyn insisted that he has received endless attacks from my parents, both privately and publicly, that were sent to the press on their orders. In his lengthy note, Brooklyn also slammed the notion that Nicola is controlling him, calling the idea completely backward. "I have been controlled by my parents for most of my life. I grew up with overwhelming anxiety. For the first time in my life since stepping away from my family, that anxiety has disappeared," he wrote. "I do not want to reconcile with my family. I wake up every morning grateful for the life I chose and have found peace." Sources tell People that David and Victoria were stunned and saddened by the public rant. They are staying quiet because they don't want to draw more attention to it. A source says of the pair, who put on a brave face days later on January 24th at the 50th birthday party for Emma Baby Spice Button, Victoria's former bandmate. "Though they're stinging from their son's strong words, David and Victoria love Brooklyn and are afraid of losing their son. They would take him back in a minute." Multiple Brooklyn and Nicola sources say that same invitation does not seem to be extended to Nicola, an actress who grew up in Bedford, New York, and Palm Beach, as one of 10 children of billionaire businessman Nelson Peltz, 83. He shares 8 with Nicola's mom, Claudia, 70. The Beckhams have no intention of reconciling with their son unless Nicola is out of the picture. But that's not an ultimatum he's going to cave on. Brooklyn has felt more support from his wife in these past 3 years than from his parents in his entire life. Insiders say the hostility between the Beckhams and their daughter-in-law goes far behind a dress and a rune dance. Victoria and Nicola got along in the first few months, but then Victoria started acting like a jealous girlfriend, a Peltz family source says. "She seems so jealous of Nicola. Not so, counters a Beckham insider. Nicola is the one who is jealous of Victoria. She wants to be famous. Tensions came to a head when Nicola and Brooklyn were planning their 2022 nuptials. While Victoria had originally agreed to design Nicola's dress, the Spice Girl said she was too busy when Nicola asked about fittings and fabric selections. Victoria called Nicola's mom, Claudia, to say she couldn't make the gown after all. Nicola instead wore a Valentino number, which she said in a 2022 Vogue interview took a year of planning. However, another source says she was always meant to wear two dresses. As for the now infamous Marc Anthony back dance, so disastrous that a distraught Nicola ran from the room in tears after seeing Victoria dancing very inappropriately, according to her husband. The couple's wedding DJ Fat Tony acknowledged on ITV's This Morning that the moment was indeed, quote, really awkward for the newlyweds and their guests. Marc Anthony asked the most beautiful woman in the room to come to the stage, and he says, Victoria, come to the stage, recalling that Brooklyn was devastated. Multiple sources says that the Beckhams and Peltzes never meshed. Their families are so different, a Peltz source says, who adds that the ultra-wealthy and private family can't relate to the Beckhams' life of extreme fame. David and Victoria have long happily lived in the spotlight. David is one of the most successful soccer players of all time, and Victoria is someone who found mega fame in the 90s as a Spice Girl before turning to clothing design, and are very strategic about everything they do because they are basically a billion-dollar corporation. Even now, they have no regrets about how they raise their kids. Says the Beckham source, they're always support in everything they do, but a struggle to find his path may be part of the problem. As a kid, Brooklyn played soccer and showed promise, but when he was dropped by Arsenal's youth club, he quit the sport altogether at 15, citing pressure and anxiety. He studied photography at an arts high school back in London, then attended Parsons School of Design in New York for a year. He also dabbled in modeling and cooking, and most recently launched a hot sauce line. Psychotherapist and author Jonathan Albert says it's not uncommon for kids of celebrities to struggle with anxiety and finding their direction. They lack psychological privacy growing up, he said. Normal mistakes, identity exploration, and growing pains happen under observation. That pressure can lead to a constant fear of disappointing others. Being compared to extraordinarily successful parents can make it difficult to build confidence or a sense of independence. Aside from feeling unheard, Brooklyn also claimed that David and Victoria were trying to meddle with his finances. Week before our big day, my parents repeatedly pressured and attempted to bribe me into signing away the rights to my name, which would have affected me, my wife, and our future children. My holdout affected the payday, and they have never treated me the same since. Records from the UK's Intellectual Property Office show that Victoria owns the trademarks on the names of all four of her children, including Brooklyn's siblings, Romeo, Cruz, and Harper. But a source close to the family insists the situation is a misunderstanding, explaining Victoria obtained them when her children were minors and unable to file for themselves. Since Brooklyn publicly blasted his parents, multiple sources say, the rift for now appears permanent. Those in Brooklyn and Nicola's circle say the couple are eager to start a family of their own, making the family feud all the more painful. While much of it is played out publicly, Albert says any lasting reconciliation should take place in private, with open hearts and ears. Healing doesn't begin with determining who's right. Blaming will not help. Parents need to listen without immediately explaining intent, while adult children need space to express boundaries. David and Victoria believe that over time, Brooklyn will come back, but they can't do anything about that then. And the next story. Rachel McAdams, Movies of My Life. Just over two decades ago, Rachel McAdams was shooting a dinner scene on the Maryland coast, surrounded by stars like Owen Wilson, Vince Vaughn, and Christopher Walken, plus an up-and-coming actor named Bradley Cooper. They were making Wedding Crashers, a movie so fun that McAdams recalls not really caring if people were going to like it or not. Cooper was in full frat mode guy playing her fiancé. I remember thinking, wow, he's so sparkly and wonderful, he's a movie star, and lo and behold, I was right. At the head of the table, Walken was busy wrapping a napkin around his face. We were there for 3 days because to shoot everybody from every angle around that dinner table took forever. We were all finding different ways to entertain ourselves. I learned that Isla Fisher could speed read because she came out with a different book every day. And then Bradley was like, look at Chris Walken. He's doing a bandit bit down there. The 2005 comedy went on to earn more than $280 million worldwide, marking another major hit for McAdams, 47, now a mom of two with her screenwriter partner, Jamie Linden. Since breaking out with the 1-2 punch of 2004's Mean Girls and The Notebook, the Ontario native has never shied away from playing or yummy supporting characters in movies from superhero sagas to prestige dramas. She earned an Oscar nomination for 2015's Spotlight. She shared behind-the-scenes memories with People. The Notebook. Auditioning for the now-beloved romantic, I was very nervous because it was a big part, recalls Adam, who still has a pair of her character Allie's espadrilles. Reading lines opposite Ryan Gosling, I went into it thinking, I'm never going to get this part, so I might as well just put it all on the table. I remember kind of floating on air when I left thinking, oh, I might be in one of those moments of my life where everything changes. Wedding Crashers, 2005. The raucous comedy starring Owen Wilson and Vince Vaughn as friends crashing strangers' nuptials to seduce women did not feel like work, she said. Shooting on the Chesapeake Bay also had its perks. Vince had a house out on the bay, and you could only get there by jet ski. So we had these jet ski taxis taking us back and forth out there for a party or a dinner party. We'd all come back and have some crab cakes and get up and go to work. The Family Stone, 2005. Diane Keaton was a maternal figure on and off screen while making the holiday classic. During a dinner scene, we weren't even shooting, and she just pulled me into her lap and snuggled me. And I thought, this is heaven, says McAdams, recalling how the late star would share advice about navigating Hollywood. As I shot the infamous egg strata scene, I remember sitting on the floor thinking, I'm just sitting an egg with Diane Keaton and Sarah Jessica Parker, and we're talking about boys. How delightful is this? The Time Traveler's Wife, 2009. When you take on a big screen adaptation of a best-selling book, the expectations are different and greater, acknowledges McAdams. But she and Eric Bana proved a perfect pair. Something about his Australian-ness and my Canadian-ness went really well together. He does great impressions. He'd do me to me. Time travel would become something of a niche for the actress, with About Time starring Domhnall Gleeson following 4 years later. My scripts are a mess by the end of each job, she says. Doctor Strange, 2016 and 2022. McAdams entered the superhero realm opposite Benedict Cumberbatch's in 2016's Doctor Strange, and they reunited in 2022 for Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness. Send Help, 2026. The new darkly comedic psychological thriller offers McAdams a juicy role playing a timid, undervalued employee suddenly stranded on a deserted island with her sexist boss after their plane crashes. I love the twists and turns in this movie, she said. In real life, I have fantasies of being a survivalist. In actuality, I would last an hour. Still, McAdams does have one key skill she picked up from her Marvel doctor days. I learned how to do stitches. It's like knitting. And the next story, single dad dead, murdered by his young sons. Terry King was beaten to death and his home was set on fire. Then multiple trials brought to light his boy's troubling relationship with a family friend. As firefighters responded to a call about a blaze at a house in Cantonment, Florida on November 26, 2001, a disturbing sight awaited them. Inside the charred one-story home, they discovered the body of a man who appeared to be reclining peacefully in a living room chair with a beverage. Then they noticed blood spattered on the walls, an aluminum baseball bat in a nearby bedroom, and the man's disfiguring head wounds. Terry King, a 40-year-old single father, had been murdered, and his two young sons, Derek, then 13, and Alex, 12, were nowhere to be found. From day one, this was a strange case, as retired Escambia County Sheriff Office homicide investigator John Sanderson, 65. I can't recall seeing another puzzling scene like this. The following day, there was a break in the case when Ricky Chavis, a local handyman who had befriended Terry and often took care of his sons while Terry was at work, brought Derek and Alex to the sheriff's station. Questioned by detectives, the boys described in meticulous detail how they had beaten their father to death and then set the house on fire when he threatened to punish them for running away to stay with Chavis. But they soon changed their story, accusing then 40-year-old Chavis, with whom Alex shockingly claimed he was having a sexual relationship, of killing their father and then forcibly taking them to his house to hide from authorities. In a highly unusual judicial proceeding at the Escambia County Courthouse the following year, Chavis and both of the King brothers were tried for the same crime, Terry's murder. In the end, Terry's sons pleaded guilty to third-degree murder and arson and spent nearly a decade in juvenile detention. Meanwhile, in three separate trials, jurors acquitted Chavis of murder, kidnapping, and child molestation, but found him guilty of being an accessory to the crime and false imprisonment. He is currently serving 30 years in prison. Now the chilling details leading up to the dramatic courtroom confrontation and its tragic aftermath are explored in Playing with Fire, a new episode of People Magazine's Investigates, premiering February on ID and streaming on HBO Max. "I never thought the boys would do such a thing," says Lisa Spurlock Little, who was then married to Alex and Derek's maternal grandfather. "Until Derek confessed, we just didn't believe it." Life was never easy for the King boys. Their parents, Terry and Janet French, now 58, split when they were toddlers. Terry was committed to raising his sons when French found a new job and moved out. But working at minimum wage jobs while suffering from narcolepsy, he struggled to provide a comfortable upbringing. When Alex and Derek were 5 and 6, respectively, they moved into a group home before being separated and living with foster families. The change proved too much for Alex, who soon returned to his dad. It would be 7 years before Derek, who had ADHD and became unhappy with his well-off foster family, that he was able to reunite with his dad and brother after Terry got a better job. But in Playing with Fire, Derek recalls that moving in with Terry, who didn't have a working TV, was a huge culture shock. The boys' lives took a dark turn when they began spending time with Chavis, who, unknown to the Kings, was a convicted pedophile. Instead of taking them to school in the mornings, Chavis drove them to his own house where they played video games and watched TV. Soon the boys had the mindset that if something happened to their dad, they could live with Rick, and he told them they could. After serving their time at separate juvenile facilities, the brothers planned to stay close and see each other often, but those plans were cut short. Alex died from a drug overdose in 2024, and Derek was arrested last June in Milton, Florida, and now faces a felony sexual assault charge. Prior to his arrest, he was interviewed by People Magazine Investigates at the cemetery where his father is buried. When asked what he would say if his dad could hear him now, Derek replies somberly, "Please forgive me." And the next story, The Return of Rosanna. She was the it girl of the 80s, shunned by industry titans in the 90s. Now she's making a splash with current it girl, Charlie XCX. I'm ready. At 66, Rosanna is now all about healing. After a tumultuous past 4 years, which included a divorce from her fourth husband, businessman Todd Morgan, and a move to the East Coast, she's embracing a new chapter. "It almost feels like I was released from prison," she says. "I'm alone, but not lonely." She's also getting back to work, co-starring in the new Charlie XCX mockumentary film, The Moment. The Brat singer sought out Rosanna specifically for the movie, which is partly inspired by 1984's This Is Spinal Tap. "Charlie wrote me the loveliest letter telling me she was a fan and it would mean the world to her if I came and played this role. I told my daughter, and she was like, oh my God, it definitely got me some cool points with her." But Rosanna says she's just happy to work again in the profession she loves so much. After she rebuffed Harvey Weinstein's advances in the 90s, she says roles began drying up. When her story was one of the first to come out in 2017 about the now-imprisoned movie mogul, she says the scrutiny was intense. "He had very powerful friends." She says she has no regrets about speaking out. "I was raised to be politically active," she said. Rosanna's childhood was certainly colorful. Her father was actor Louis Arquette, who played J.D. Pickett on The Waltons, and her mother, Brenda Deneau, was an actress turned therapist. For a short while, they lived in a commune in Virginia that Rosanna says wasn't quite the utopian dream they thought it would be, and Rosanna left home at 16. "I've been independent for a long time," she says. She and her actor sibling Patricia Arquette, David, and Richmond are all close now. "We've gone through a lot," she says. "When my parents died, when our brother Alexis died, and when our He died of cardiac arrest in 2016. It kind of blew everything up, and we weren't as close as we could have been. Everybody was so traumatized and in grief. Now she says they chat all the time in the family group text. Their children are also getting into the family biz. Her daughter Zoe is a powerhouse, she says, who is starring in director Luc Besson's reimagined Dracula. Coco, David, and Courtney Cox's daughter is an amazing singer and in theater. And Harlow Jane, Patricia's daughter, is an actress. The new generation of Arquettes are way more talented than we were. As for her five-year plan, it's all about work, family, friends, and yes, maybe even love again. I'm okay without a partner now, she said. I have to meet someone who's enthusiastic and supportive about what I do. But I'm so grateful for everything and where I'm at, even with all the bad stuff, because there's always a lesson in that. I just know that I'm ready for anything. And that's it for tonight, so tune in next week. Bye.